This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Nearly 70% of the elderly rely on Social Security benefits for more than half of their income, and nearly 40% rely on Social Security for more than 90% of their income. Meanwhile, the president is pushing the myth that Social Security and Medicare face economic collapse and that the budget deficit imperils the fiscal sovereignty of the nation. He's proposed a cut in the annual cost of living adjustment that would be a substantial hit to a population ill-prepared to see a cut in its income. We spoke with Bob Borsage, co-director, Campaign for America's Future.
President Obama's proposed chain CPI change to Social Security benefits. Let's flesh out what that actually really means and what it portends for those it's intended to impact.
This is a benefit cut. It's disguised and packaged as a technical fix, but it's basically a benefit cut. Social Security is the only program that we have that adjusts itself to inflation each year so that seniors, the value of their benefits, they stay up with the cost. What this does is slow that adjustment of inflation so that by the time someone who's retired is about 85, they will find a benefit cut of about $1,000 from our already modest Social Security payments. So it's a pretty severe cut. It takes place over time, so it has a gradual impact, and it's presented as a technical fix because they don't really want people to get that that's what it is. You know, the obvious thing that people have to understand is 25% of married couples rely on Social Security payments for about 90% of their retirement. About 50% of people who are living alone in retirement rely on Social Security for about 90% of their retirement. Those are staggering numbers. The average Social Security benefit is about $2,200 a month. So on very modest payments, if you slow their adjustment to inflation, that is, you lose ground over time to the rising costs that you face, those people who are reliant on Social Security are going to have to start making choices. In fact, the argument for the CPI is that as things get more expensive, people make different choices. So you go from eating steak to eating chicken, and from eating chicken to eating Spam, and from eating Spam to eating cat food. It's those kinds of choices that get built into having a slower rate of inflation adjustment over time. It assumes that seniors faced with limited resources, not keeping up with rising prices, will tighten their belts in different ways. The problem with this, of course, is that seniors spend disproportionate amounts of their money on health care, on prescription drug and health care payments outside of Medicare, and those are rising historically faster than the normal rate of inflation. So many experts believe the current adjustment inflation for seniors really underestimates what they need to have their benefits stay level with their expenses. This is going to make that worse.
Given the fact that fewer and fewer seniors have retirement plans these days and that the trends are in the direction of really reliance on Social Security, isn't this moving in entirely the wrong direction? And what direction should we be looking at in terms of Social Security?
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. You know, the whole theory of retirement during the days when we had a broad middle class was that we'd have three legs to the stool, was the metaphor. One leg would be Social Security, one leg would be the pension you got from the workplace, and another leg would be your private savings. Over the last two decades, corporations have moved dramatically from providing defined benefit pensions to setting up retirement accounts. And in doing that, they dramatically reduce the amount of money they provide as matching or as contributions to an employee retirement. Basically, they gave employees a pay cut. And the 401ks, the retirement accounts, don't come anywhere near replacing the old pensions and are very meager indeed. I believe the average retirement account is now at about $20,000, which doesn't provide much for folks. And in the crisis, when families were scrambling to try to keep their mortgage payments going after they lost a job or to keep the family being fed in the interim, they often had to break into their retirement account and withdraw the money prematurely. And so a lot of those retirement accounts took a hit in the last crisis as well. In terms of private savings, the retirement account is basically the private savings that people have. And so what you have is a generation that's headed towards retirement that is in dramatically worse shape than their parents' generation, and that is increasingly reliant on Social Security. Social Security benefits only replace about a third of people's income on average. That's about half as much as other industrialized countries provide to workers on retirement. And these very modest payments really are enough to keep you, they were basically designed as a floor to keep you above poverty, and they've been successful. They're probably America's most successful poverty program in terms of putting a floor under seniors in their most vulnerable years. But they are not payments that are designed to allow you to sustain even any shadow of your former lifestyle when you were working. And so we ought to be talking about what do we add to Social Security that provides people with a secure retirement. We ought to be doing an expanded Social Security program that helps replace what is now vanished, which was the old defined pensions programs. But instead, what this policy is a policy that's headed towards reducing the modest payments we make over time. And it's really truly the wrong way we ought to be going forward.
There certainly are, according to the Obama administration's proposal, what they would call protections that are, they claim, designed to cushion the impact. And I wonder if you can just lay that out, because certainly there are those that would say that while you may be calling it a benefit cut, there's faulty logic in that, arguing that the chained CPI is simply a more accurate way of measuring changes in living costs.
Well, that's the problem with the position, is you can't argue both things at once. You can't say it's not a benefit cut, and incidentally, we're going to protect the people from the benefit cut who are the most vulnerable. I mean, either it is a benefit cut or it's not. It obviously cuts the amount of money people are going to get over the years, and the administration, because of that, suggests, well, we'll protect the most vulnerable. People who are over 80 will kick in a boost to it so that they don't really disappear beneath the poverty line, and the most low-income seniors will shield from its effects to some extent. So in a sense, they are admitting that it's a benefit cut. They're just saying we'll try to keep the most vulnerable from getting hit the hardest by it. But that means it will hit the retirement accounts of working Americans.
There's also other cuts that are associated with the redefinition of the CPI, including hits on income tax and also, I believe, on federal workers' pensions and also a number of other ramifications. Could you go into that?
Yeah, the income tax thing's a little confusing for people, but basically, you know, income tax rates are adjusted by inflation also. So each year it was designed to keep, actually by conservatives, to keep people from being kicked into a higher rate simply by inflation adding to their income while the rate stayed at the same level. So now the rates go up with inflation and you're less likely to be kicked up into a higher rate. What this does is slow the rate at which income tax rates will be raised, and so it makes it more likely that people will be kicked to a higher bracket. Ironically, the result of that is, of course, it only applies to people who are not in the highest brackets. The richest Americans don't have to worry about being kicked to another bracket because they're already at the highest bracket. So it really has, it's an income tax increase of about $100 billion over 10 years that applies to people making less than about $250,000 a year.
You know, there are those certainly who would say that, such as myself, wealth and income inequality in this country is greater than any time since the 1920s. So don't balance the budget on the backs of the elderly, the children, the sick, and the poor. But, and that's actually what Senator Bernie Sanders said, on the other hand, there are those, and I really want you to kind of debunk and look at this argument. Social Security is the cause of and has definitely added in any event to this catastrophic deficit.
Yeah, the deficit, this is a hysteria that's being generated and fanned in order to get the country to accept reforms that would otherwise be politically unacceptable. Our deficits went up when the economy collapsed. A large portion of that was automatic stabilizers. People went on unemployment insurance. Unemployment insurance had to be paid when they lost their jobs. Food stamps went up, etc. Those are good things. Those keep families from sinking beneath the water, and they keep the economy from moving from a severe recession into a depression. In addition to that, President Obama did a three-year addition of about $300 billion a year in spending and tax breaks as a stimulus. That's all expired now. Over the last 3 years, since the slow recovery began and people started going back to work, the deficit has come down very rapidly. In fact, it's come down faster than any time since the demobilization at the end of World War II. Next year, it'll be down about 5%. It's projected to go down to about 3.2%, I believe, the year after that. So the deficit really is not a crisis, not a problem. Where people then turn to as they're trying to fan this hysteria is they say, oh, but the deficit now may be coming down, but look at our long-term debt and deficit projections as the baby boomers retire. All these entitlements are going to bankrupt the country, and we're going to turn into Greece, and the dollar will be worth nothing. But when you look at those projections long term, and they do show rising deficit, they are very misleading because, in fact, Social Security contributes almost nothing to that projection. And Social Security, by law, is not allowed to add to the deficit. And it is relatively modest reforms done separately can deal with any problem down the road. Almost the entirety of our long-term projections about deficits comes from our broken healthcare system. We paid dramatically more for almost everything than any other industrialized country, whether it's from a doctor's appointment to a hip replacement to prescription drugs. If we paid on what the other industrialized countries pay on average, with incidentally better healthcare results, if we projected that level of costs, we would right now be projecting surpluses as far as the eye can see. So our entire focus should not be about let's slash Social Security, let's roll back programs for poor children, et cetera. We can't afford it. We're about to turn into Greece. Our entire focus, to the extent we're concerned about long-term deficits, should be on continuing to reform our healthcare system to get the costs under control. And that's not about cutting benefits. That's about taking on the drug companies and the insurance companies and the hospital complexes that use their political clout to rig the rules so that they are among the most profitable industries in our country, and we are paying costs unlike any other people in the world.
Well, there are provisions in Obama's new budget that do impact on Medicare costs. I'm not quite sure if they go in the right direction, though. So why don't you talk about the cutbacks in provider care to hospitals and some of the other cutbacks that are in the budget?
Well, the biggest projected cut in the Obama proposal is one that is quite sensible, which is essentially allows Medicare to negotiate bulk discounts on prescription drugs the way the Veterans Administration and Medicaid do now. Of the savings, it's the largest savings that come out of Medicare over the next 10 years. And that's really sensible at this point. One of the most astounding things about the prescription drug benefit that was passed under Bush was that the drug lobby managed to have included in it a provision that prohibited Medicare from using its buying power to get discounts and prices on drugs, which is obscene, really. And it's not surprising that the Republican chair of the committee that passed that then went on to become $1 million a year chief lobbyist for Big Pharma, the drug lobby. So that reform is a good one, and it helps create savings that we're for. There's another reform that's a little troubling, which is Obama does a premium that forces Medicare recipients that have Medicaid plans, that is, those are the plans that cover any of your expenses that Medicare doesn't cover, often provided by union insurance plans that are good insurance health care plans. It imposes on those people that they pay something out of pocket when they get medical service. They go to a doctor or get a checkup or whatever. And the idea there is essentially it embraces the conservative argument that says, well, our health care costs are high because Americans use too much health care. And they go to the doctor too often, and they demand too many tests. And so by raising costs to people, we will lower the usage of health care and create savings. And the problem with that, obviously, is the people who will change what kind of health services they get because of a small fee are the poorest people who can't afford it and are the ones you want to provide help for so that they can afford the medical care that they use. And the whole notion is sort of silly. Our problem isn't that Americans go to the doctor too often or replace too many hips. Our problem is that our hip replacement surgery costs about twice as much as any other industrialized countries.
You know, the change CPI change in the cost of living allowance, it's a change that really affects, of course, how much Social Security recipients receive. So, for example, I know that if you were a 75-year-old retiree, you would get roughly a $700 cut. If you were 95 years old, you would get roughly a $1,600 cut. But what troubles me, aside from the numbers, or not aside from the numbers, is the whole philosophic way we look at Social Security, the way they consider it to be an entitlement rather than what I would consider it to be, which is an earned benefit, where people pay into it their whole lives. So what's the trouble in this country with getting even the public to really understand things in that term so that there really would not be the kind of attack on Social Security that we see? I mean,
well,
nobody's talking about cutting the tax break entitlements on corporations, for goodness sake.
I don't think there is a problem with the public. 85%, the polls are overwhelming. People do not want Social Security benefits cut. They do not support the chain CPI, even though it's presented as a technical fix. If they do see it as an earned benefit, they're prepared to pay higher taxes to make sure that benefit doesn't get cut if it's, you know, if it falls short. But they don't want it messed with. And I think politicians who don't understand that are going to pay a dear penalty in the next election. You know, one of the ironies about this is a lot of progressive groups, including our own, have been warning Democrats that the president doesn't have to run again, but if you're running in a contested election in 2014 and you support the president's plan to cut Social Security, you are going to face a challenger who will flood the airways with ads charging you with cutting Social Security, and you will be dramatically hurt politically. And we saw that in 2010 when Republicans flooded the airways after the Obama health care plan. We actually made a good cut out of Medicare by reducing the amount of money, by saving money from the Medicare Advantage programs, which were just giveaways to the insurance companies. Republicans went on the air with ads. Obama cut $400 billion out of Medicare in order to pay for Obamacare. This Democrat supported them. And seniors came out in large numbers and voted in overwhelming margins against Democrats. So there really isn't a problem with the public wanting to protect these programs. Social Security is popular among the millennial generation, among the young generation that understands they want their grandparents to be secure and they don't want to have to support their parents when they're retired. They want them to be able to pay for a secure retirement plan through Social Security. So this is an overwhelmingly popular program. It is only in Washington where you have a Republican Party which has tried to use every crisis to extort systemic changes in Medicare and Medicaid to limit the most popular government programs there are as part of their philosophical assault on government. And you have a Democratic president who, faced with that extortion, has tried to figure out the least painful ways to try to figure out how he can reach a bargain with these people to move forward. And so out of that then came the diabolical creativity that came up with the chain CPI as one way to do that. And the administration people arguing this is the least painful way to cut Social Security. Well, it may be, but it's still a cut in benefits, and it's unacceptable.
Well, the last question is, even if we are victorious and defeat the chain CPI and other changes like that, is this budget good enough to get the country back on its feet?
Well, that's the problem with this whole debate. You know, the president's budget's not going to pass. We have a divided government. It's already been announced dead on arrival by Republicans. We're going to be in difficult negotiations over the next period of time. We're going to face another debt ceiling crisis with Republicans trying to use that to extort deeper cuts in spending and corporate tax breaks, et cetera. And so what's in the budget is simply a statement of the president's mission, and that's, in my sense, where the president's budget's the most alarming. You know, we have an economy with over 20 million people in need of full-time work. Wages are declining, not rising. Insecurity is growing. We have a generation of children that are not being provided with the kind of quality education they need and deserve. We have a climate change, which is a real and present danger now, that is simply not being addressed at anywhere near what we need in terms of beginning to move to an economy that's sustainable. We have an infrastructure that is literally collapsing under our feet and not close to being the 21st century infrastructure we need to be able to compete as a high-wage nation in a global economy. So we have significant investments that have to be made to get this economy to work for working people again. And the president, in putting out his mission statement, has made it clear by his own words that his mission is to cut a deal. It's not to rouse Americans to meet those challenges. It's not to challenge the conservatives that are standing in the way. It's to find a way to split the difference. And at a time when we need transformational leadership on these issues, this budget doesn't meet the challenge, doesn't meet fill the bill. You know, if by some miracle Republicans decided to pass everything in the Obama budget, the economy would be better than it is. There's some money for infrastructure there. There's some the beginnings of creating universal pre-K in the country. There's some good things in the budget. But it's not of the scale or of the scope needed to make this economy once more move towards full employment and create a situation in which we start to rebuild the middle class instead of tearing it down, and we start to lift people from poverty instead of watching them sink into it. And so this debate now in Washington is much too limited in its terms to deal with the challenges the country faces.
Bob Borisage with Campaign for America's Future. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
And now, Randy Newman.
We've taken all you give. It's getting hard to make a living. Mr. President,
presents speeches by Senator Bernie Sanders and AFL President Richard Trunka denouncing President Obama's budget proposal to cut Social Security.
I am delighted to be here with my friends in the Progressive Caucus and Senator Harkin, and we're also standing with groups like the AFL-CIO and Rich Trunka and millions of workers. We're standing with the AARP and the National Committee to Defend Social Security and millions of seniors.
Right.
We're standing here today with every veterans organization in this country, and we're standing here with the National Organization for Women. We are representing tens of millions of Americans who are saying that at a time when we have more wealth and income inequality in this country than at any time since the 1920s, you do not balance the budget on the backs of the elderly, the children, the sick, and the poor.
That's right.
As Senator Harkin indicated, when one out of four major corporations, profitable corporations, is paying zero in taxes, when we're losing $100 billion every year because corporations are stashing their money in the Cayman Islands and in some cases paying nothing in taxes, there are ways to do deficit reduction that are fair. I stand here today not only as someone in opposition to cuts in Social Security, but as chairman of the Veterans Senate Committee. And I don't know what kind of country we become when we think that we are going to balance the budget on the backs of men and women who have lost their arms, their legs, and their eyesight defending this country. We are not going to balance this budget on the backs of disabled veterans. And don't kid yourself, those cuts in the chain CPI will be very significant, will be very hurtful to people who have already given so much to our country. Thank you.
Men and women all over this country are being represented at this podium today, and one of the champions of labor, Rich Trunka, is here with us today at the AFL-CIO.
I'm pleased to be in such great company, and I want to thank all the great representatives here for standing up for the seniors, for the disabled, and all of those that depend on Social Security. Social Security did not cause, nor did it add to, the deficit in any way, right? So we've come here to express our collective opposition to a bad policy proposal. Chain CPI is some economists' fancy way of weakening one of Social Security's most important protections, its cost of living increases, its annual COLA. That protects the purchasing power of benefits from inflation. Social Security's COLA protects the real value of benefits, and it prevents seniors from losing economic ground each and every year. Now, for seniors, this COLA is particularly critical because other sources of income decline with age. Although the average annual benefit is just $15,000, it comprises 90% of the income of one-third of the seniors and disabled. Only 14% of our citizens have a defined benefit plan. And the median level of the 401ks in this country is $16,649. Now, does anybody really believe that we have too much retirement security in this country?
No.
Does anybody believe that our seniors are well enough off and should be the ones to give more up at a time when it's obvious to all that U.S. corporations are not paying their fair share? Does anybody believe that this is the time to make economic inequality worse? Does anyone here really believe that our private pension system is flourishing, or that American workers can amass secure retirement savings accounts that can be counted on to last a lifetime? And who here believes that Americans can rely on the equity in their homes for financial security? You know, now I've been told that not to worry about the chain CPI because there will be protections for some of the most vulnerable in our society, that our oldest seniors will receive a one-time benefit bump to lessen the hurt of the benefit cut. You know, if the chain CPI is more accurate, why the exemptions? Why having that? Social Security represents the best of American values, and more importantly, it works. So we call on the President and members of Congress to use our collective energy to protect and enhance, rather than diminish, one of the nation's finest, most popular family protections, and one program that helps the disabled more than any other.
Go Red Dad! Go Red Dad!
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.